Encourage me the whole way long. Nigga say, ow! What's poppin', y'all? Konnichiwa! What's going on? You're listening to Nestorius Public Radio live on SkidRowStudios.com. Welcome, y'all. Welcome. I'm your host, Nestor Rodriguez, a.k.a.
Nestorius, the glorious, the fabulous, the mactabulous, the bow. Check your car tabs with this.
That's it. That's what I'm talking about. And with that, that's my man, Simon Kaufman. What's popping, Simon?
Oh, you know, this is what life's all about. Just coming down here on a Thursday night, rocking the podcast with my two friends, you know, telling the people, taking it to the people.
Who likes to rock the party?
Just get on the mic.
And mic three, we got my nigga Rich C. What's popping, y'all?
What's up, everybody? I got that sexy post-cold flu sexy deep voice coming at you. So turn up the bass and sit on your speaker.
We like that shit. We like that gravelly, graspy, fucking gritty, dirty, shitty voice. Just like being live down here. Yo, for y'all that don't know, we're in downtown Los Angeles. On Olive, South Olive Street. And if you're ever in the hood, you know, wave at the grit. You know what I'm saying? Keep it real. So I want to give some big ups to my people in India. Big up, Cha! Big up, India! Big up, Calcutta! But my people, I got DJ Kamalot in Calcutta. What's up, baby? Big up, Cha! Yeah. I want to give some big ups to the people in Detroit. Big up, Detroit! Big up, big up. Y'all people need some love. Big up. Yeah, yeah. And some of our people in New York City, I want to give some big ups. Big up, New York City. Big up, South Bronx. That's right, we're going to start it off with some big ups. You know what I'm saying? Y'all got any big ups?
Yo.
Big up to my friend, Doctor.
Big up to Halls.
Big up to all your people working with the Halls of gluten-free products. You're not eating your gluten.
Oh, it's happening, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so if you're listening to us, call and you feel like talking to us, dial 1-800-893-9562. 1-800-893-9562. It's been a crazy week, man. You know what I mean? That's right. We're going to kick it live and take off what we left off last week and kick a little bit on Detroit, the fucked up part of Detroit, the shit that's going on in Detroit, the different issues that our government is using with our tax dollars, CIA operatives, Guantanamo Bay, you know, all sorts of shit. And as promised last week and wasn't able to deliver, John Crash Matos interview, part one. That's going to happen here. And some other shit, you know what I'm saying? So stay tuned and call in 1-800-893-9562. That's right. Anyway, yeah, so I want to talk about tipping. I want to talk about, like, gratuities and tipping, you know. Both of y'all work in the industry. Y'all are servers, and you deal with people, and your whole, your whole existence, like most Los Angelinos, rely on people who go out and spend their money and give
tips. There's a big wealth of service industry individuals.
Yeah.
After I failed at community college,
right,
I really turned to the waiting tables.
Yes.
That's a viable option.
Not wrong with that.
Purchase.
So I went to a restaurant. But by the way, I went to go see a documentary, and right off the bat, I want to say, I went to go see a documentary that my friend Marina Zenovich directed on Richard Pryor, and it's called Richard Pryor, Omit the Logic, and it's going to be on Showtime. I believe it's airing tonight, premiering tonight on Showtime. Check your local listings, man. It's totally worth, I mean, it's a pretty dope documentary from A to Z. Amazing. Marina did a kick-ass job. Big up, Marina!
Marina, you're the one that directed in the movies.
Big up, Marina Zenovich!
Showtime, anytime, prime time.
Big up, Omit the Logic! Big up, Richard Pryor! That's right. So after the screening, man, the shit was off the hook, you know. We went across the street to this hotel, and we were just, you know, grabbing a couple of drinks and hors d'oeuvres and shit like that. And it was cool, very, very laid back and whatnot. And I got the bill, man. And so this is where it kicks off, right? I get the bill, and, you know, the bill's underneath, and then I get the two copies, the restaurant copy and my copy, to sign, right? And and there's an empty tip line. So I'm about ready to drop a tip on this. And I said, well, let me make sure on the bill that she didn't fucking charge me for, like, everybody else's martini or whatnot. Yeah,
she charged me for the large hummus platter. I ordered the small hummus platter. Right.
Yeah. So when I look at...
Because a lot of times they're twitching at the computer. You know, they're all jacked up on coffee. They hit you for two steaks and not just one. Yeah.
No, it's for 3 days.
Well, there were a lot of people there, you know, and I gave her my card, and it was just for certain things. So I look, and there's 18% tacked in there, right? Now, the bitch didn't even once tell me, you know, the tip is included, right? Yeah. On top of that, there's a fucking tax on top of the tip. So there's the subtotal, the tip, and a tax. And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? You know what I mean? So, of course, I called my nigga Rich, and I was like, yo, what should I do about this shit, man? Should I call the Better Business Bureau? Is this legal? And da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, I started getting all sorts of insights about, you know, the maneuvers and, you know, the shell games that fucking restaurants, the lawmakers and fucking waiters do.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Well, I learned a little bit about that too. And
you
go to the California State Board of Equalization at ca.gov, somewhere in there, if you can find it, there's you know, an area with forms and publications about all that. It's publication 115, tips, gratuities, and service charges, mandatory charges. A restaurant can put 18% on larger parties or on the whole check if you want, and then you actually have to pay. I didn't realize
this.
If they want to. Yeah, say you're at a hotel bar, and it's a lot of, you know, Europeans or Australians. Or
forget all that shit.
No, listen. And they put that on there to
protect. I don't
want to
know about the reason. I want to know what the legals are. Because everybody says, oh, I just splatted in her ass because she was wearing a shirt. I don't give a fuck about I want to know what the law says, and I want to know what the fuck.
The law says that if a restaurant puts 18% on there, you got to pay it, and that will be considered it's a service charge, and it can be taxed. Because it's something that is applied there, because the restaurant is putting that on your bill.
Okay.
Now, if you leave a gratuity, if it's optional.
Whoa, you're saying it's mandatory? I have to pay it if a restaurant puts 18% on my fucking tab?
When you negotiate amount of a tip, gratuity, or service charge with your customer.
Whoa, stop. I never negotiated a tip.
No, coming from the owner of the restaurant.
He negotiates it with who?
When you negotiate an amount of tip, gratuity, or service charge with your customer in advance of an event that includes serving a meal, food, or drinks, that amount is mandatory.
Right, but he didn't negotiate shit with me.
This is how it's negotiated. In some cases, menu brochures, advertisements, or other materials contain printed statements that notify customers that tips, gratuities, or service charges will or may be added to the bill. Examples of printed statements include an 18% gratuity or service charge will be added to parties of 18.
I've seen that.
So they have that.
That's usually in plain view. I don't have to fucking get a microscope, call my lawyer, and
Were you a party of six or more?
I was a party of three. There was a bunch of fucking people there sitting down, but it's questionable whether I was a party of six. I gave her my card for three people. I mean, in fact, I gave her a card.
Yeah, but that's still a party. It doesn't matter how you, if there's six or more people sitting at the table, that's a party of six or more.
Okay.
It doesn't matter how you split
but
up
that's
the bill. Basically, she took a look at you and she was like, oh, this guy's not going to tip me. I'm putting on an 18%.
That's fine. Yeah. See, the thing is, I usually tip 20%, right? So she fucked herself off 2%, which is fine, right? She gave it to the government. Right, because the government charged 9% on her fucking 18%.
She's given it to a lot of people lately, and that's really the problem. Her mother's concerned. She's been giving it up all over the neighborhood.
Whatever. I just want y'all to know in cyberspace that Nestorius Public Radio, we work really hard and we're very vigilant to see where all these scumbags all over the place try to like weasel and fucking.
How much was the 18%?
No, that's not the point. That's not the point. That's not the point. The point is that it's fine. If they're gonna do that, she should have said to me, there's a tip already included. Not fucking hide.
That's at the discretion of the restaurant, because some restaurants don't care if the waiter tells the customer that, hey, there's an 18%, because if it's on the menu, whether the size of it or not, you know, you go into a place and it's actually printed on something, you know, and that's at the discretion of the management. If they make all the waiters say, hey, by the way, there's an 18% gratuity on your check because, you know, you're a party. I do that because it's kind of like an honest thing. It's in small print. And I say, hey, just so you know, there's an 18% gratuity on there. You know, it's in very small print. I want to make sure that you saw it. And then it kind of works in my benefit because people like the honesty and they go, oh, that's really nice. And then they'll give up the extra 2% to make it 20 if they were going to. A lot of times people like it, too, because they can just go straight up. They don't have to worry about it. They go, that's the final bill. But let's separate it by the six of us. And that's that.
No, got it. I think it's great. Yeah. But I still think that, you know, you should be notified. That's all I'm saying. I don't think you should, you know, the restaurant shouldn't pussy out and be like, well, it's microscopically printed in the menu. That's bullshit, okay? That's straight up bullshit.
Yeah. You
know, when they prevented blacks from using the same water fountain, there was a big fucking sign, right? That said, blacks not allowed, right? So if you're going to fucking put signs to fuck people, make them visible is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You got me?
I get it. I understand. But, you know, it's at the discretion of the owners.
At the restaurant.
This? You know, you go to a comedy club like in New York. Let's say you go to Caroline's.
Right.
Tickets are like $20-25.
Right.
But you don't pay at the front. They put it on your bill at the end.
Right.
And you're paying an 18% they add the gratuity for the two drink minimum. So think about this for a second. You're tipping a waitress on your ticket.
Right. On $25.
So if you two people, let's say it's $50.
Right.
So you're tipping 18% on the $50 ticket. So really, it's more than that.
You see, this is the problem I'm having here. There was a time, and I remember tipping was something that you did if service was good and if you felt like it. Okay, where the fuck does it say that it's mandatory to tip somebody?
Well.
Here's
the thing, and this is debatable up and down and everything, but you know, a lot of owners of the restaurants and stuff like that, they want to make sure that their employees are happy, because if they don't have happy employees, morale sucks, they're going to get bad service.
So blow the employee right before the shift, get them all in the kitchen, pull their pants down and suck their dicks.
And here's another thing, I'll go back to the hotel. You know, you get a bunch of people from Australia.
I'll go back to the hotel and I'll fucking urinate all over the fucking pots.
If you have
with the plans, that's what I'll do.
If you have a hotel.
Next time, I'm talking about the Century, the Hyatt fucking Century across the street from 2000 Century Avenue of the Stars or whatever.
I bet you they got a lot of foreigners there.
I don't give a fuck what they have. What I'm trying to say is I will go down there next week and I will urinate in the kiddie pool.
We're going to be doing some promotions, on-street promotions with our Nestorius Public Radio promotions street team. And one of the things we will be doing will be urinating at a
No. I'm just saying, I'll just carry a little card with fine print and set that'll say, wherever I go, I just urinate wherever I feel like. You understand? So that should cover me, you know what I mean? Because it's in print.
Right.
Right? It's just, I just think it's a little outrageous what's going on. You know, shit that happens.
Well, there's a lot more people in the service industry. There's a lot more people out there working. There's a lot more people that are forced to support a family. And listen, there's a lot of cheap fucks out there too.
But hold on. Why should that burden be put on the consumer?
Because if you want to go out to eat and you want to get good service and all of that, you should expect to live in the day and age to now.
Because it's the etiquette of society. It's the society we live in.
Just like if you go to a comedy club and there's a two drink minimum.
No. I don't buy that
shit. They're forcing your hand.
So if you're an asshole driver, you should expect me to cut you off. And if you fucking start some shit, you should expect me to roll down my window and throw a bottle at you.
Well, that's illegal.
Right, because you should get
but
with
that's
the
illegal.
So is fucking forcing people to pay shit that they didn't buy.
Apparently not.
Well,
you should stay home and make a Progresso soup.
And the whole aspect of it is, if you go out and you eat dinner and you can't afford a tip, you should just stay home and eat Progresso soup.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
here's, going out, because you have no business going out in the first place.
Okay, this is the deal. These guys are servers, and I totally understand that.
You're going to serve a little while to really understand this point.
They make their living on tips, and that's cool. You know, I'm a tipper. I tip 20%. I go out with some cheap motherfuckers, and they don't want to tip. And, you know, you do that once, and then you don't go out to dinner with them
again. Blame your friends for the 18%. Don't blame the fucking restaurants.
Nah, they're on their own. I shouldn't
Those
have to,
motherfuckers are fucking it for you.
I shouldn't have to bear the burden for assholes. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. So with that,
have no individual rights on that.
Obviously,
one.
I have no individual rights in America anymore.
All the assholes are bearing the burden for you.
I don't have any rights anymore.
No assholes want to bear the burden for anyone else. That's the problem.
I don't have any rights anymore. I guess that's what it comes down to. But
you have a right to stay home and get a DiGiorno.
You have a right to sit down, scan that menu, and say, "Oh fuck, 18%."
Here's the deal. It just took me by surprise.
Yeah.
Okay. It was just the way it was done. Mm-hmm. Right? It was almost like the check was hidden.
Look, I guarantee that server, a lot of servers there, they're doing that on purpose.
They're banking on the double grat. Right.
They want the double grat.
So I just want to say,
and that's fucked up.
It is what it is.
Servers of America, if you're out there and you're listening,
it is what it is. It is what it is. I just want to say to all my notorious public radio listeners, Don't fucking be afraid. Don't be embarrassed to look at the fucking check and, you know, whip it out. Pull it up in the sky and make a big fucking deal. Because if you're paying 18% and they're fucking trying to shiest you, man, you got the right to fucking contest and ask for an explanation. You know what I'm saying?
You got to fight for your right to tip.
No, but here's the deal. Here's the deal. My thing, the second part of it is, why should I pay tax on a tip?
That's an interesting thing.
My thing is, take the fucking tip off,
right,
and it's my right to see if I want to give you a tip.
Right.
Okay? So then you tax me on my meal, the meal and the check is gone. Now, if I want to give you a tip, I'll hit you off. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, as a server, personally, I'd like to work at a place that everything has an 18% gratuity on it.
Right.
But then I'm a server.
Me too.
But then I'm a server. I mean, wouldn't you like if you were working and stuff? And plus, you know, it's minimum wage. You know, people are making minimum wage.
Yeah, but take that up with the government. Don't take that up with the fucking, with the consumers.
Well, that's the minimum wage. At least there are a lot of restaurants that pay less than minimum wage based on your ability to earn tips.
I know, New York, I know.
But the next point is that tax on the 18%, that kind of fucks the consumer.
The whole thing fucks the consumer because you're taking the right of the consumer away. You're saying you have to do it.
It's the local government. Well, it's your choice to eat there or not, but it's the local government, though, that actually, they're putting a tax on the service charge if it's added on there on the receipt.
And that's in California.
But then they charge the server on that as well.
So they're double fucking taxing.
They're double dipping on that.
So basically the waiter is trying to double dip on you.
And they're taxing the restaurant for employing the server.
Right, right. So it's awesome.
Well, California's broke, man.
Yeah.
You know,
California's broke?
They got to get their money,
California's
bro.
Broke? California's broke?
Nice segue.
Okay.
Huh?
All right. California's broke. This is straight up. I didn't make this up. A fiscal boon for California. After years of budget crisis, California is set to finish the fiscal year with a surplus of billions of dollars, according to officials. The impressive showing comes largely as a result of Governor Jerry Brown's recent tax hikes. Bend over, here it comes. Approved by voters in November, like this fucking tax bullshit that you were just talking about.
Yeah.
Right? Approved by voters in November. According to state government figures, business taxes are around $200 million ahead of projections. And personal income tax payments are $4.5 billion ahead. Brown will reveal how he intends to spend the unexpected surplus later this month.
Thanks, Brown.
I'm sure he's going to reveal it. Sure.
But we're going to get a slip and slide with chocolate and some hookers.
Right. But state law may require much of the money to go to schools and community colleges. Yeah, right. Yeah. State fucking community colleges. And anything left over will be used to pay down the state's debt of almost $28 billion. Do you see this circle jerk? You see what I'm saying? So they have a surplus from personal income tax, $4.5 billion, and $200 million on businesses ahead. That's how ahead they are.
Mm-hmm. How is it only $200 million on the businesses, but $4.5 million on the people?
California, the fucking government, Jerry Brown.
You put the brown in brown, Jerry Brown.
Flush the brown down.
Eat my balls, Jerry Brown.
If it's yellow, it's mellow. Okay. If it's brown,
because people don't get educated. There's a fucking surplus of cash, right?
Yeah.
So what are they going to do? Spend it in schools? Really?
What's wrong with schools, man?
I see a lot of fucking retards around me. What schools are they going?
Yeah.
What schools are they going to?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They suspended in fucking driving classes so motherfuckers out here could at least learn how to drive a little bit. You know what I mean? They should have public tipping classes for fucking people who go out to eat early. You know what I mean? Like an elective.
There should be a public awareness of tipping and gratuities.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I agree with that, but, you know, I'm a little
excited
on that.
Last week we were talking about Detroit, and I felt like we kind of rushed through that whole thing, you know?
Detroit!
Right. We're talking about Detroit, and it's a city in fucking turmoil. I started watching a little bit of the documentary Detroitopolis, I believe it's
Detroit,
called.
Detroitopia?
Detroitopia, thank you. Yeah, Detroitopia.
I want to check that
out. It's on PBS. It's on your local. I think it's called Something Lens is the name of the program. Anyway, Detroitopia is the movie.
It's on PBS, though, right?
Yeah. PBS.org. And the movie starts out, man, with bulldozers, okay? Bulldozers and a news reporter in front of, like, what would have been, you know, a fucking $700,000 house. With the bulldozer and the fucking going right into it and just pummeling it.
Right.
And the guy goes on to say that we do about 5 of these a day. About, I don't know how many a month.
Somebody's getting rich.
It's amazing.
Demolition.
So you know, and the thing is that, you know, I'll get into this a little bit afterwards, but, you know, we have the Guantanamo Bay scenario. We have all sorts of shit that our government uses our money for. And, you know, we have the fucking three-card Monty shit with the IRS. Like, who gives a fuck if the IRS was scrutinizing a particular party?
Because it's against the Constitution if they were. You're not allowed to.
They scrutinize everybody. What are you talking about? First of all, that issue right there has to do with political involvement, okay, and wanting to apply for tax exempt status. It's against the law. This is the first thing. It's against the law or against the fucking rules of the IRS to apply for tax exempt status if your fucking organization is involved politically, okay? So that's the issue. So shut the fuck up, okay? You're trying to fucking not pay taxes, and you're a political organization. What's the problem?
Don't forget also, and I don't know, I haven't heard anybody else say anything about this, but the platform that the Tea Party, you know, is supported on is, I don't want to pay fucking taxes, yeah. And I don't want the government in my fucking bullshit, right? So here's the thing. If I fill out my tax form, I do it all by hand and all that shit, and then I attach a little note, maybe a post-it that says, I don't believe in you guys. I don't believe I should pay taxes. I don't believe you guys should be in my shit, and attach that to my fucking form, and I send it into the IRS. I think that might be a little bit of a red flag. So yeah. If you name your party or your tax exempt party having anything to do with Tea Party, that's a little bit of a red flag there as well. Why wouldn't anybody in their right mind at your job doing what they're supposed to do look at that and go, Yeah. It's ridiculous. I don't know why the government can't just stand up and say something like that. Like, look, first of all, your point, Nestor, you're not supposed to be filing for tax exempt. You know, and with a name that is affiliated with political parties,
thank you.
Trying, you know, that's the first red flag. Right. And the second red flag is what you fucking stand for.
Right. Who gives a fuck if there was an inter-office memo that said, look out for these guys because they're trying to apply. Let me tell you something. I was just audited. The big issue is, what was it? They were inconvenienced and harassed. Anytime you get audited by the IRS, let me ask you a question. Have you ever gotten a letter from the IRS, Rich?
Yeah, they said that.
Did you feel happy?
Oh, no.
Did you feel all happy about it? Did you feel like, things are going to go great?
Not even when I got a check, because I was worried it was going to be a notice saying I didn't pay enough. You know? That initial, like, oh, fuck.
The envelope that says IRS.
IRS, oh, fuck.
That's, How do you feel when you get any kind of correspondence from the IRS?
I feel like when my car breaks down in a really bad neighborhood and I have to walk to try to find the gas station.
And it's dark. And you hear crickets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or...
Yeah, so it's like, wake the fuck up, okay? That's the purpose of the IRS, to fucking have your hair fall the fuck out. Your hair, bald instantaneously.
They want you fucking scared of them,
yeah,
man.
So why are these people exempt? I mean, I don't understand. The point is that it's all fucking, you know.
Dude, it is
It's, again, it's like, aha, we got him. It's just one side or the other going, ah, now right. we got him.
Yeah.
And it's and they can get them on that point, and they can get them on that point legally.
Right, right.
There's no common sense to it.
Legally?
And unfortunately, there's no common sense to our government, and that's kind of a common sense loophole.
Legally, you know what it means? That means for the next 3 years, they're going to spend more fucking billions of dollars trying to find out if there was something wrong, if there's a loophole, was there a crime? Right. It's all bullshit. Take that money.
That's $1 billion right there.
Right. Take that money and put it into places like Detroit.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what I'm trying to say. All right?
Absolutely.
You know, Guantanamo Bay, the big issue, and we can go into Guantanamo Bay for hours. Guantanamo Bay, the big issue is there's a lot of political prisoners there. There's no need for to have a prison there. Do you know how much it costs the United States government to have one prisoner in Guantanamo Bay?
I'm going to say
a year or a day.
If they shopped at a 99-cent store and you, three squares of a day... I don't know. I'm going to say about $19.50 a person a day. Because that's what I was living on when I was fucking out of work. What's the number?
Based off the current tea prices in Guantanamo, I would say
just get the cheapest tea party, motherfuckers.
The number,
don't make it cheap.
You ready for this?
Yeah, what's the number?
$900,000 a year.
Per person.
Per person. $900,000 a year. Per person, okay?
That means those guys are making $900,000 a year.
Okay.
Every one of those, and there's 166 of them in there?
Are you feeling me on this shit, Simon?
But
that's a lot of tip money.
What a lot of you don't realize is they're doing...
That's a lot of fucking untaxed tip money.
Well, they're making money
because... there's a tip for these guys that serve them their fucking hose in their nose.
They're torturing them by making them do webcam from their cells.
What?
Live gay Guantanamo gay webcams.
Anyway, shit. we're gonna keep it moving here. Then there's the CIA operative. You remember this shit that I sent you? The CIA operative, right? You remember this? There's a CIA operative that was busted in Russia. Okay, busted in Russia with a fucking baseball cap. Okay. Did you hear about this? A baseball cap with phony hair. Looks like Dana Carvey from Wayne's World. Okay? They bust this dude, and of course, the webpage isn't coming up.
Apparently, this guy was sick on disguise day.
Do you have the webpage on this dude's hair? Yeah, I get it right now.
Yeah, they caught him with two wigs.
Yeah. I'm going to post a picture. Basically, a man identified as Ryan C. Foggle, a diplomat, was arrested in Moscow. The low-tech evidence raised questions. I'm going to post this picture. He arrived at the meeting with two wigs, the blonde one on his head, held in place by a baseball cap, a brown one in his knapsack, which also held a compass, a Moscow street atlas, and $130,000 in cash. He was an operative for the Central Intelligence Agency, one of our brilliant organizations in the United States of America,
right?
One of the top-notch agencies, Russian officials say. And his goal was to recruit a Russian security officer as a spy. He even carried a letter offering up to $1 million a year for long-term cooperation and signed affectionately, "Your friends." You stupid motherfucker.
Yeah, but hold on. But it's probably a setup, you know? I mean, like, what American operative is walking around with a letter of evidence, $130,000 in cash. He had a Three Musketeers bar, a box, a thing of mocha mix, non-dairy creamer, like a fucking cell phone.
Dude,
like,
come on. Cracker Jack compass
He had a Cracker Jack. He had a Toys R Us spy kit.
Low-tech spy kit. You know, he's got... two different colored wigs there. They got Crockett. Yeah. They named them Crockett and Tubbs. That came out later.
Yeah, he bought it at Toys R Us.
Spy wigs.
No, but what I'm trying to get at is, with all the things that are going on in this country, this is what our country spends money on and wastes time on. Basically, the number of people living in poverty in the suburbs has risen by 64% in the last 10 years. Or twice the rate of urban property growth, okay? An estimated 16.4 million Americans under the poverty line, right? Which means $23,021 for a family of four now live in the suburbs, okay? Compare that tip money to the $900,000 tip money that we're paying for Guantanamo Bay, all right? It's crazy shit.
That's a
You'd
bullshit number.
You make more money
anyway,
being
though.
In Guantanamo.
What's a bullshit number?
That poverty line, it's not even accurate. I mean, it's probably like, you know, the poverty line is actually a lot higher, you know, to what it takes to live in this country.
Probably. We're going to move on very close to John Crash Matos' interview. So stay tuned and stay with us.
Hey, yo, we're here in the South Bronx at John Matos, a.k.a. Crash, a.k.a. prolific artist extraordinaire, worldwide sensation.
Limited
sensation. studio, yeah. This shit is crazy. So I got like a million questions, and I'm probably going to go all over the place. But I read that you started painting at 2.
Yeah, actually, yes. I was one of those little kids that you give them a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen, and I would draw, absolutely.
And did you have encouragement from your parents? Did you grow up in a single family, a single mom, a single dad at home, or both your parents with you?
Both my parents were there.
Okay, did you get encouragement from them?
Actually, from my older sister. My older sister was really into fashion designing, and in the early 60s, mid-60s, school teachers would come to the homes. You know, they would come in and do, like, tutoring, which they don't do now. And he happened to be an art teacher, and, he's giving her lessons, and I'm in the playpen in the living room. And, you know, I'm carrying on, like, hey, you know, I want to participate. So give me a piece of paper and a pen. And that's how it happened.
So you're in a playpen in your Pampers and shit, and the teacher comes to visit?
Wait, there were no Pampers then.
They were cloth.
They were the real deal.
Cloth diapers with those big ass pins.
Yes.
I think they discontinued some shits in like 1973.
Yeah, too many piercings.
Now it'd be fine.
Now it works.
Now you can have piercings in your eyes. I also read that you were not formally educated as an artist.
Correct. I was not formally educated.
So I find that interesting, especially, well, here's the other question I have, and we'll tie it all in there. I know a lot of guys who started doing street art or graffiti, and a lot of guys who have become, you know, professional artists mm-hmm. like you and make a living mm-hmm. prefer not to be called or associated necessarily as graffiti artists.
Correct, right. Well, I mean, you know, there's this whole thing about graffiti and the street art. It's two different forms that one branched off the other. A lot of the street artists are actually college-educated kids. You know, they saw graph and decided to go, like, to Rhode Island School of Design or whatever, and they took a different take on it. And, you know, it's easier to take a stencil and a can of paint and, you know, go around doing these little things all around the city, whereas with us, 10 cans, we do one piece and we're done.
Right. So you're saying that, like, graffiti from its inception back in the late 60s, early 70s was more of a exploration and an evolution. It wasn't really an art form yet.
Well, I mean, the early stuff, you're like the late 60s, early 70s, that, you know, it was still in its infancy. So, and people keep forgetting that graph, the original concept was to be famous. You know, like, look at my piece. It's the best. It's the best. It's the best. So, as it progressed, as it grew, it got fancier and more colorful and more stylized. And the trains, you know, when they started doing all the buffing, was sort of like the decline of it. And then the street artists, you know, the street kids, they took it to a different level. They're still with the fame idea, but now they were able to multiply it, you know, and do more with less.
Replicate a specific image, mm-hmm. like guys like Shepard.
Shepard, right. So it was ingenious.
Right.
And I mean, I like the concept. I love the whole thing of it. And it's, you know, it's very different.
Right. So it was a different form of branding and a different form of mass producing your image,
right,
so that you can become famous that way, as opposed to painting one train and hopefully
right.
not having the MTA
right.
buff it
right.
long enough so people could see it.
Correct. And also the thing about it also, it homogenized, you know, it made it palatable. People in offices can hang a Shepard Fairey, you know, cause it's whatever it is.
It's more commercially accepted.
Yes, absolutely.
Whereas graffiti back in the 70s, that was a crime. And there was
shredding to your face.
And also, it was there was a lot of negative connotation to it.
Correct.
What do you think about, like, I remember, you know, I'm a native New Yorker, and I come to New York, and I go back and forth from L.A. to New York. But I remember the first time I started seeing the floor to wall and ceiling wrap around on the inside of the shuttle going from Grand Central to Times Square. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing, what the fuck is the difference between this mass commercialization of bullshit?
There is no difference. The difference is that we didn't paint it. That's the big difference. They decided to hire someone and do it.
Right, right.
That's what it is.
Right, because if you look at trains in the 70s, you will notice, you know, tags, mm-hmm. which is completely different than you know, piecing, yeah. writing stuff outside of the trains. But if you look at the inside of the trains, like the shuttle or the number, whatever, number six or whatever, they were completely covered in tags in black ink.
Correct.
And when I look at that, if I was to step aside and look at it from an arbitrary perspective, it almost looks like the same shit.
Yeah.
You know?
It very much is. I mean, the difference is it's printed and wrapped.
Right.
That's it.
Right. I actually find the commercialization, the printed and wrapped stuff, a little bit more offensive. Because coming from and growing up in New York, you know, I'm always looking at things from a sociological and racial perspective. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, you know, if there's money involved and commerce to be made, then it's okay. Especially if it's from a legitimate source.
Exactly. So what happens is you go to Macy's. Macy's will be willing to give you $3 million. You know,
the MTA, to design a condom case.
And MTA, you know, and the MTA is, you know, they need money.
Right.
You know, so $3 million, you know, for 1 week and, you know, whatever, and let's do it.
So what do you mean the MTA needs money and Macy's?
The transit authority, they need money. You know, they're busted, they're broke.
They're always needing money here.
Yeah, that's why they did it.
Well, I mean, most people don't know this, but the MTA is not a government agency. It's a privatized agency.
Correct.
And what happens is that they always rely, like states and cities, on the federal government to subsidize their bullshit.
Right.
And the thing is, you know, this is another completely different topic. But it's related in a sense because it's about responsibility.
Correct.
You know, it's about, you know, you get money and you to spend it and to use it wisely, and you should be held accountable.
Yes, that's why the MTA is busy taking all the old trains and dumping them in the ocean to create artificial reefs. What the heck? All that money spent.
Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, man, yeah. All the old trains, what they've done is they've taken them and they dropped them off the Jersey Shore and create artificial reefs.
Wow, all right.
So you're talking about billions in the ocean?
Yeah, but I mean, it's also mismanagement, you know.
Absolutely, that's the big one. Yeah,
you know, it's like I'm reading in this news magazine about how California, for instance, now has a surplus of cash, a fucking surplus. Meanwhile, if you look at the price of gas, you would think about maybe, and I'm talking on my ass when I say this, but let's say 15% of what you're paying is in fucking tax,
like in New York.
Those taxes are used to offset, you know, basically the municipalities need to raise money, and where they're going to raise the money, where they're going to tax, you know, wherever they can the most.
Yep.
Drivers, workers, cigarette smokers here in New York. So wherever they can tax you, they're going to tax you. You know what I mean?
And now they're doing the internet tax.
That's another bill that they're trying to pass. Internet sales tax.
Yeah.
But that's another thing. I mean, I just find it interesting how in the 70s, and I think the buffing system started, what, in the early 80s?
Mid-70s.
Oh, mid-70s they started buffing?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And oh, so they got a little bit more fancier as the years went on.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. So I find it interesting that in the 70s and 60s and 80s, when the graffiti movement came about, yes, there's a criminal element to it because you have to trespass. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, you know, most of the kids that were doing it weren't working, so they didn't buy the spray paint.
Well, that was, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if you go to any hardware store right now and you notice that there's the paint can section at Home Depot or wherever, they're all locked.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because, you know, you have to be 18 or over to smell the aerosol. It's because motherfuckers used to steal this shit.
Yep.
And it goes back to that.
Yep. Absolutely. And right now, I'm 52 years old. I need to show them my license in order to buy the paint.
Here in New York?
Yes, sir.
Really?
Yeah. Doesn't matter who you are, you got to show ID to buy paint.
That's funny. You could be in a walker, you got to show ID?
Yep. You could come with your grandmother and she's like, we need your ID.
Do they register your ID? Or
no,
they just
do it. It's by law.
Got it. Back in the West Coast, you don't need ID. If you look old enough, they let you go.
Not here.
They let you go. So at what age about did you take your passion for wanting to express yourself on a grander scale and then started painting on trains and whatnot?
Well, I started doing the walls around my neighborhood about when I was 13, 14.
Walls, murals.
Yeah. Right, and then 75 was the first train I did, 1975, so I was 16, 15, 16.
Wow. And how did you, who was your inspiration? I know you mentioned there were a couple of cats in your neighborhood that were established subway art painters. Correct. But like, I mean, there's no formal apprenticeship for this. It's not like you go, no. I want to do this.
No. The formal apprenticeship, no. You pick it up on the streets, like breakdancing. That's your formal apprenticeship.
so it evolves in a sense or in a way as an activity that you do to, you know, keep yourselves occupied and out of trouble, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, although it was illegal, it was a form of trying to keep us away from getting, you know, I mean, we grew up in pretty hardcore neighborhoods. So yeah. Every one of us knows more than two or three, you know, junkies, prostitutes.
Just two or three?
Well, I mean, generalized. So we all know that type of lifestyle that we come from. So graph was the mildest, the easiest.
It was a way to prevent or avoid more serious crimes: robbing, correct, killing, correct, yeah, mugging. Yep. Smoking, drugs,
were the two easiest things, and graph was easier. You know, you didn't have to like train, you know, 8 hours a day to you know, kick a ball, whatever.
Right. So I mentioned earlier graffiti artists versus just artists. Mm-hmm. There's no difference
between graffiti artists and artists. It's the same. It just so happens that we work, you know, with a different medium.
So then, why such a negative connotation?
The deal with spray paint is because it's so immediate. People couldn't understand that. Like, you know, I could take a can and just do my name on a corner, and they found that offensive. Mm-hmm. But guarantee that if, you know, I'm walking around with a palette and acrylic, you know, and just do my thing, they wouldn't bother. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the random act of it is what I think was what put people off, and then the fact that everything was stolen. I mean, we used to steal the acrylics. And the mm-hmm. brushes, too, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and markers. So it didn't make a difference. But mm-hmm. I think it was the random act of it that was offensive.
So then why in the 80s a guy like Keith Haring comes along and starts doing, granted.
Yeah, but he got arrested a bunch of times, too.
Right. But what I'm about to say comes from a socially accepted form of art. You know, he had gallery showings, right, and he was more socially accepted within the downtown art scene. And so again, I look at this these issues kind of like from a sociological, racial.
Well, it was a different type of language. I mean, we were in your face. Here we are. Check us out. These are our names. Keith was in your face, but he had a language all of his own. Mm-hmm. And I mean, a lot of us just, you know, we got along well with him, and we were into it. Mm-hmm. And his language was a lot different. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I still remember that when they did the memorial for him at St. John the Divine, whoever was speaking, you know, he mentioned that Keith was, and he mentioned a bunch of us because it was important to him. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. So and it was very important to Keith that he was part of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I could see that you guys inspired him. I mean,
absolutely.
I know his, you know, a lot of his history from, you know, Pennsylvania art school to doing all sorts of stuff. He's a very smart guy. Yeah. And I remember being turned on to him.
Sidetrack.
What is that?
A friend of mine's a gravedigger.
Oh, wow.
So he says, you can fit in here.
That's funny. So Crash just showed me a picture of a grave, and a freshly dug grave.
Yeah.
So could you buy that if you wanted? Could you, like, hold that, like, on reserve and shit?
Yeah, well, I think he probably has a couple of bodies going in today.
Got it. Oh, wow, that's crazy.
That's what he does.
That's crazy. Has anybody ever commissioned you to paint a grave marker or a tombstone?
No.
That would be pretty dope, huh?
That would be crazy.
That would be dope. Yeah. That would be fucking dope. I might think of that, except I'm not going to be married. I don't believe in burial. I believe in cremation. Anyway.
I'm going that route, too.
You are? You're going that route?
Yeah.
Good. So, anyway, we just went on a completely different side.
Rabbit trail?
Rabbit trail. That's funny.
Whole different thing.
Well, I mean, it's kind of related because Keith passed away in the early to mid 90s, right?
1990.
Yeah. He died of AIDS. God bless Keith. I was a fan of Keith's work. What I was saying was I remember when Keith Haring came about. Of course, no one knew who Keith Haring was.
Correct.
All you saw were the chalk drawings inside of the postered MTA billboards.
Yeah.
So, and it was interesting because you'd be on the train, kind of like what you guys are doing with the big murals on the train. It was like, wow, what is that?
Yeah.
Who is that? And I think, you know, that is the point of art. I think art is supposed to provoke thought and question. I think.
Correct. I mean, that's any type of art. I mean, Rosenquist, he was quoted as calling graffiti, was it? A lively bouquet from South America as it rolls by the station. I'm like, that's great.
That's what he called it?
That's what he called it.
So what's your relationship with James Rosenquist?
I think more than anything is the way I paint, you know, his positioning of imagery. It's like taking a collage and just putting it in a blender and see what happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he's absolutely amazing, totally underestimated. Undeservedly.
You think he's underestimated?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you got someone like Warhol. I mean, you know, Warhol's not around anymore. And Rauschenberg and Jasper Johns, where the pieces are going through the roof.
Right.
And I think he's very undervalued.
Right. Okay, so you're saying undervalued in the commercial art market.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even know. First of all, you're an inspiration to me. No, seriously, as an artist, you know, because when I started painting in 2003 or something like that. I mean, like you, as a kid, I used to draw.
Right.
And the reason I asked you about if you had gotten support from your parents was because I don't think I got that type of support.
Latino parents don't do that. You know, they initially think that art is like, you know, bourgeois. It's like, that's not going to pay the bills.
Or
you need to go to school and you need to get a job and become a mechanic or a plumber or whatever.
Right.
It's going to help, you know, put the money in.
Because art is not a career.
Art is not a career, according to them.
Right, you can't make a living, so what's the point?
Exactly.
It's not legitimate. What are you doing with your life?
That's it. It's like being an actor, the same type of thing.
Right.
Parents, you know, Latino parents are like, what? You know, what are you doing? What? You know, come on.
Get acting. Why don't you act like you're cleaning your room?
Yeah, that was my that's part one of my interview with John Crash Matos from the South Bronx, Puerto Rican guy, self-taught artist, amazing, brilliant artist. For those of you that don't know, Google John Crash Matos. He did a series of Stratocasters for Eric Clapton. He did this amazing wall on Houston Street in New York City. I'm going to post a picture of it on the SkidRowStudios.com site underneath this episode. This is episode 9. So go to the SkidRowStudios.com website and check out the individual episodes. And I post pictures related to the episodes underneath my underneath the episodes. If you're still alive and you're drinking and you're driving, call 1-800-893-9562. I mean, what the fuck? Who gives a shit? Crash into somebody. You know why? Because you should know better. You know what I mean? This is a theme of today. You should just fucking know better. You know?
You already fucking up. You might as well tune in.
Yeah. You already wasted your whole fucking life.
Fuck it,
you
know, up some
mean?
More. Fucking turn it on.
You already wasted your life. Just don't worry about it.
You're not doing anything. I mean, for crying out loud, you owe people money. You know, the family members.
Yeah. You ain't doing shit with your life. You know what I mean?
You're doing shit.
What are you doing?
You're sitting in your living room in your underwear eating cornflakes with rice milk. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Wake up. 1-800-893-9562. All right, back to the art world and fucking stupid shit that people spend their money on. This this dude spent I don't know how many millions at an auction at Sotheby's. This dude, I don't even know what the person's name is. They didn't put his name because somebody
did shit.
They think it's Prada. He's got an Italian accent.
Somebody would shoot the guy. Trust me. That's the agency that did it. Here, there's. I don't know if you guessed
it was Muziana Prada.
No. I don't know if you guys are familiar. I wasn't too with Barnett Newman. He's obviously a 50s abstractionist. So he's got these paintings. Two paintings that are about 6 foot tall by about 4 feet wide. All it is blue. Not even different shades of blue. Not even squares of blue. Not even sparkles of blue. Just fucking two big rectangles of blue. Okay? A diptych. It's called a diptych. The name of the painting is One Meant Six. Anyway, this is what the painting sold for at auction at Sotheby's. $43.8 million, you stupid motherfucker!
Big up for stupid motherfucker.
No, big up. You get no big up. Anyway,
you know what it looks like? It looks like he ran out of blue paint because you can kind of see some of the white showing through. It just looks like a bad paint job.
That's the light. That's the light.
It's terrible.
Yeah, that's the light. That's the light that's hitting it. Anyway, let's go to the Bronx, man. Let's go to the Bronx. So there's a company that does ghetto tours, right? It's called Real Bronx Tours in New York City. So residents in the South Bronx are in an uproar because this tour bus company is bringing in tourists into the South Bronx to show them how, you know, the spicks and niggers live, and the people who live in the neighborhood are like in a serious uproar. They're like, come on, man, we don't want people, you know. Let me just say for those of you that live in the South Bronx, you know what I'm talking about. You know what for those that grew up in the streets in New York City, you feel me, you know what's going on. No one gave a fuck in the 70s, 80s, and 90s when the South Bronx was fucking smoked out, when it was cracked the fuck out. No one cared about it, okay? Soon as the rents go down, cheap enough for people to go in there and start buying property, gentrifying it, making it all nice and fucking pretty, and then people got something to say about tours coming into the South Bronx. So, you know, I have a mixed reaction, being that New York City is one big fucking Disneyland anyway, yeah. and you can't get mugged in New York City. You can't even see what New York City was like when I was growing up, because Times Square, I like Times Square with hookers and pimps. I like when I was able to buy crack on the street. It kept people alert. You understand what I'm saying?
You can't find crack. Everyone's walking around with M&Ms and Reese's Pieces.
Now motherfuckers are walking around tweeting with their BlackBerry. I like when shit was when you were on your toes. Yeah, you couldn't walk into Harlem without noticing that you were white. You understand what
people
I'm saying?
People learned a valuable lesson back then.
Even people that weren't white
They learned like life lessons just walking down the street. It didn't need to be taught to them.
Right. You know? Don't fucking look. Don't stare too long at somebody. Mind your business.
You got staring problem people.
Yeah. Don't step on my new Puma suedes. You know what I mean? That was fucking laws that people, unprinted laws. Anyway, the Real Bronx Tours is getting their ass kicked because the residents, and they don't say what residents, but you had a couple of quotes, right, Rich? Something about
those days are over. The Bronx is being rebuilt. It's rising again. The Bronx resident and Grammy-nominated musician Bobby Sanabria.
Bobby Sanabria is a Fania All-Star. Bobby Sanabria is a Puerto Rican musician, stand-up comedian, and he's a Fania All-Star. But you know what, Bobby? Come on, man.
You know, I think what happened is now that the tour group immediately shut down. You know, and they could have done is they could have worked out a deal, you know, where they kind of changed it around and then made, you know, where they get a percentage. What'd you say, 15%?
Look, right? I think it's phenomenal. I think that ghetto tours, why not? Ding, 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 ding. All right. And if on the Red Line tours through the South Bronx, if you please look to your left, you can see the Negro in his modern habitat.
That's what I'm saying. It says, Sanabria, Martinez, and other Bronx residents are meeting Friday to kickstart a counter campaign to what they call the Bronx's negative image.
Yo, wake the fuck
up. Wake the fuck up. The Bronx's negative image? The Bronx has a negative image, especially the South Bronx, since, you know, the beginning of time.
Yeah, yo, it doesn't mean you can't kickstart a counter campaign.
Here's what Al Quinoa said.
Yeah, yeah. This is one of the guys who's stirring up the fucking keep the South Bronx beautiful. Al Quinoa.
Mr. High Protein.
Who probably has about $50 million in whole food stock.
Yeah, walked in Birkenstocks.
He said, we've had enough of the gawkers who come to ghettoize us.
He's
a caretaker of a community park that features a garden with fruit trees and a stone outdoor amphitheater. Their timing was bad. The Bronx is not burning, not now. It's in a resurgence. Now, you know what? He couldn't have come on so strong and made like a kind of a side deal and said, listen, man, all right, just change how you're talking about us on your website. We'll let you do it. But, you know, we get 15% and we'll help out. And then, you know, 15% goes to my park and my caretaker and all that. But no, they made a big deal.
Okay.
They shut it down. And now I had heard that this tour company is now going to Detroit.
Right. Well, here's the thing. What they need to do is they need to get these prisoners from Guantanamo Bay, release them, make them be tour fucking bus guides, okay? Make them do South Bronx tour bus guides, okay? Let them go down to fucked up neighborhoods and then make the South Bronx an extension of Disneyland/Disney World. Call it fucked up section. Have a bus that takes you from It's a Small World down to the South Bronx and you get... you know, blown by hookers, a free sample of crack by fucking crack dealers, and stabbed by spicks and Negroes. You know what I'm saying? Get the real life experience. You know what I mean?
I came with Scott LaRock to express one thing. I came with Scott LaRock to express one thing.
All right, we got a couple of minutes. We're gonna wrap this. We're gonna wind this shit down. We gotta give some big ups, man. We gotta give some big ups. Big the fuck up to the South Bronx Community Projects. Big the fuck up to all your Puerto Ricans that urinate in the elevator of the projects. Big the fuck up to all you fuckers that don't wear shoelaces after you come home from the joint. Big up keeping it real, you South Bronxite motherfuckers. Keep it real, yeah. Keep it real to all the Jews that fucking steadfast broke the South Bronx for the blacks and the spicks to come through. You know what I'm saying? Big the fuck up. Yeah. So what's popping, man? We got it like 2 minutes, 1 minute. What's going on with you, Simon?
Oh, man, just hanging out in Los Angeles, working on my tan, drinking mimosas, hanging out.
All right. NestoriousPublicRadio.com. The site is going to be up live and direct. You can like us on Facebook / Nestorius Public Radio. You can hit me up at Nestorius@gmail.com. And don't forget to tune into SkidRowStudios.com. Any time of the day, come down, check out the rest of the shows that we got. We got some live and direct shit. Tell your people about it. Go to iTunes. Hook up Nestorius Public Radio. Subscribe to that shit. Download the episodes. Tell your people. Get educated. Do something with your life. Clean your underwear. Stop eating Cheerios with rice milk, you cocksuckers. Nestorius Public Radio, we out.
It's me. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along.